we've just completed in the description of the universe, hearing about the Shishumara planetary systems. And now, something below the earth, those were above the earth. And now, in the last few chapters, actually, from the... There was Dambadweep, then we heard about the movements of the sun, the orbits of the planets, and now the Shishumara planetary systems, which are above the earth, and now we're going below to the subterranean regions. And the subterranean chapters, there are three chapters, one describing the subterranean heavenly planets. And then the next chapter will be the glories of Lord Anantadev, who sustains... We'll hear about Anantadev next week, if Krishna allows. And then finally we hear about the hellish planets, the lowest of the planets in this universe, at the bottom of the universe. Maybe you could ask them to make the tape low. Better they can, but not talk about low things. So the chapter is fairly quite a few purports, and so we'll see how much we can complete today. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King, some historians, the speakers of the Puranas, say that 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles below the sun, is the planet known as Rahu, which moves like one of the stars. The presiding deity of that planet, who is the son of Shimhika, is the most abominable of all asuras. But although he is completely unfit to assume the position of a demigod or planetary deity, he has achieved that position by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Later, I shall speak further about him." So exactly what Rahu is and its function, it's described very briefly in the next verse, but the pastime of Rahu and the causing of the eclipses by Rahu is described in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam. But in the next verse, describing Rahu and the sun, Sukadeva Goswami says, "The sun globe, which is the source of heat, which is a source of heat, extends for 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles. The moon extends for 20,000 yojanas, 160,000 miles, and Rahu extends for 30,000 yojanas, 240,000 miles. Formerly, when nectar was being distributed, Rahu tried to create dissension between the sun and moon by interposing himself between them. Rahu is inimical towards both the sun and the moon, and therefore he always tries to cover the sunshine and moonshine on the dark moon day and full moon night." So that's the eclipses always take place, either in the Amavasya, the dark full moon, and the full moon night, the Purnim. After hearing from the sun and moon demigods about Rahu's attack, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, engages his disc, known as the Sudarshan Chakra, to protect them. The Sudarshan Chakra is the Lord's most beloved devotee and is favored by the Lord. The intense heat of its effulgence, meant for killing non-Vaishnavas, is unbearable to Rahu, and he therefore flees in fear of it. During the time Rahu disturbs the sun or moon, there occurs what people commonly know as an eclipse. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is always the protector of his devotees, who are also known as demigods. The controlling demigods are most obedient to Lord Vishnu, although they also want material sense enjoyment And that is why they are called demigods, or almost godly. Although Rahu attempts to attack both the sun and the moon, they are protected by Lord Vishnu. Being very afraid of Lord Vishnu's chakra, Rahu cannot stay in front of the sun or moon for more than a muhurta, 48 minutes. The phenomena that occurs when Rahu blocks the light of the sun or moon is called an eclipse. The attempt of the scientist of this earth to go to the moon is as demoniac as Rahu's attack. Of course, their attempts will be failures, because no one can enter the moon or sun so easily. Like the attack of Rahu, such attempts will certainly be failures. Text 4. Below Rahu, by 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles, are the planets known as Siddhaloka, Charanaloka, and Vidyadharaloka. Text 5. Beneath Vidyadharaloka, Charanaloka, and Siddhaloka is the sky called Antariksha. In the sky called Antariksha are the places of enjoyment for the yakshas, rakshasas, pisachas, ghosts, and so on. Antariksha extends as far as the wind blows and the clouds float in the sky. Above this, there is no more air. Below the abode of the yakshas and rakshasas, by a distance of 100 yojanas, 800 miles, is the planet Earth. So far we're describing from the highest planets of something about Dhruvaloka down to the planet Earth again. The upper limits of Earth extend as high as swans, hawks, eagles, and similar large birds can fly. My dear King, beneath this Earth are seven other planets known as Atal, Vital, Sutal, Talatal, Mahatal, Rasatal, and Patal. I have already explained the situation of the planetary system of Earth. The width and length of the seven lower planetary systems are calculated to be exactly the same as those as Earth. In these planetary systems, which are also known as subterranean heavens, Bilaswarga, now, this is what the subterranean heavenly planets are like. There are very beautiful houses, gardens, and places of sense enjoyment, which are even more opulent than those in the higher planets, because the demons have a very high standard of sensual pleasure, wealth, and influence. Most of the residents of these planets, who are known as Daityas, Danavas, and Nagas, live as householders. Their wives, children, friends, and society are all fully engaged in illusory material happiness. The sense enjoyment of the demigods is sometimes disturbed, but the residents of these planets enjoy life without disturbance. Thus, they are understood to be very attached to illusory happiness. We'll read Prabhupada's purport there. According to the statements of Prahlad Maharaj, material enjoyment is maya sukha, illusory enjoyment. A Vaishnava is full of anxieties for the deliverance of all living entities from such false sense enjoyment. Now we're going to hear the type of enjoyment that they have. And remember this statement, that a Vaishnava is an anxiety because he wants to deliver people from this type of enjoyment, false enjoyment. So when we hear about the type of enjoyment it is, we'll speak about why it's called false or illusory enjoyment, maya sukha. Prahlad Maharaj said, maya sukhaya baram madvahato vamudan. These fools, Vimudas, are engaged in material happiness, which is surely temporary. Whether in the heavenly planets, the lower planets, or the earthly planets, people are engrossed in temporary material happiness, forgetting that in due course of time, they have to change their bodies according to the material laws and suffer the repetition of birth, death, old age, and disease. Not caring what will happen in the next birth, gross materialists are simply busy enjoying during the present short lifespan of life, the present short span of life. A Vaishnava is always anxious to give all such bewildered materialists the real happiness of spiritual bliss. So we'll ask, what is the difference between the happiness one achieves on the material level and what is the happiness that one achieves on the spiritual level? And what is the danger or the negative? What is negative about the material level of happiness? And what is positive about the spiritual level of happiness? Okay, continuing, that was a very brief description how the people in the residents of the lower planetary systems, how they're engaged in wonderful material happiness, even better in some senses than the material happiness achieved on the higher planetary systems. One set of living entities is pious, and the other is impious. And sometimes the impious will achieve higher happiness than the pious on the material level. Text 9. My dear King, in the imitation heavens known as Bilasraga, there's a great demon named Maya Danava, who is an expert artist and architect. He has constructed many brilliant decorated cities. There are many wonderful houses, walls, gates, assembly houses, temples, yards, and temple compounds, as well as many hotels serving as residential quarters for foreigners. The houses for the leaders of these planets are constructed with the most valuable jewels, and they are always crowded with living entities known as Nagas and Asuras, as well as many pigeons, parrots, and similar birds. All in all, these imitation heavenly cities are most beautifully situated and attractively decorated. The parks and gardens in the artificial heavens surpass in beauty those of the upper heavenly planets. The trees in those gardens, embraced by creepers, bend with a heavy burden of twigs with fruits and flowers, and therefore they appear extraordinarily beautiful. That beauty could attract anyone and make his mind fully blossom in the pleasure of sense gratification. There are many lakes and reservoirs with clear, transparent water, agitated by jumping fish and decorated with many flowers such as lilies, Kuvalayas, Kalaras, and blue and red lotuses. Pairs of chakravartas and many other water birds nest in the lakes and always enjoy in a happy mood, making sweet, pleasing vibrations that are very satisfying and conducive to enjoyment of the senses. Since there is no sunshine in those subterranean planets, time is not divided into days and nights, and consequently fear produced by time does not exist. Many great serpents reside there with gems on their hoods, and the effulgence of these gems dissipates the darkness in all directions. Since the residents of these planets drink and bathe in juices and elixirs made from wonderful herbs, they are freed from all anxieties and physical diseases. They have no experience of gray hair, wrinkles, or invalidity. Their bodily lusters do not fade. Their perspiration does not cause a bad smell. And they are not troubled by fatigue or by lack of energy or enthusiasm due to old age. They live very auspiciously and do not fear death from anything but death's established time, which is the effulgence of the Sudarshan Chakra of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is Prabhupada's short purport to this verse. This is the defect of material existence. Everything in the subterranean heavens is very nicely arranged. There are well-situated residential quarters, there's a pleasing atmosphere, and there are no bodily inconveniences or mental anxieties. But nevertheless, those who live there have to take another birth according to karma. And before one can take another birth, what has to happen? Yes. So death, rebirth. No old age, though, practically speaking. No disease, practically speaking. But yet, death and rebirth. And where is rebirth? It is not sure. Persons whose minds are dull cannot understand this defect of a materialistic civilization aiming at material comforts. So that defect, those defects are always there. And because materialism absorbs one's consciousness, materialism absorbs the mind. Materialism makes us think, practically speaking, only of further materialism. And one's mind becomes filled with materialistic desires. And one forgets his own death and thinks that his materialistic plans and materialistic enjoyment, materialistic pleasures will go on continuously. This is called illusion. So materialistic civilization means increasing of illusion. Illusion means that one does not see things as they are. One, practically speaking, sees things as they are not. One doesn't see things in the proper perspective. That is what illusion means. One doesn't actually view reality, although one may be thinking that I'm seeing everything that exists, but one is not actually seeing reality. One is seeing illusion. An illusion means that I don't want to think about death. I don't think about death. I have so many plans. I'm going to enjoy. I'm going to enjoy this, that, and the other. And especially how dominating that illusion would be if there is no old age and disease to remind us of our frailty and our mortality. One may make his living conditions very pleasing, Srila Prabhupada continues, for the senses. But despite all favorable conditions, one must in due course of time meet death. The members of a demonic civilization endeavor to make their living conditions very comfortable, but they cannot check death. Yes. The influence of the Sudarshan Chakra, because the Sudarshan Chakra, an energy of the Sudarshan Chakra of Krishna, is the time factor. And the time factor pushes us unwillingly, like it or not, to death. Everyone, regardless of anything, although it doesn't seem like it, but each person has that to look forward to. So therefore, an intelligent person will not spend his life just frittering away his time thinking in trivial sense pleasures, thinking or forgetting that he is going to die, or thinking that he's not going to die, thinking this isn't going to happen to me. An intelligent person knows what's going to happen. That is a function of the intelligence, to see ahead, to see the future. And therefore, knowing that that's going to happen, although the tendencies for sense enjoyment may be there, he sees them as paripantano, means stumbling blocks in self-realization. So an intelligent person, despite the lures of material pleasures, he avoids them and he decides determinedly to make spiritual advancement. The influence of the Sudarshan Chakra, is time. We're not allowed the so-called material happiness to endure. 15. When the Sudarshan disc enters these provinces, the pregnant wives of the demons all have miscarriages due to fear of its effulgence. My dear king, now I shall describe to you the lower planetary systems one by one, beginning from Atal And Uttal, there's a demon, the son of Mayadhanava, named Bala, who created 96 kinds of mystic powers. Power. Some so-called yogis and swamis take advantage of this mystic power to cheat people even today. Simply by yawning, the demon Bala created three kinds of women, known as Svarini, Kamini, and Punchali. The Swarinis like to marry men from their own group. The Kaminis marry men from any group. And the Punchalis change husbands one after another. Punchali literally means moving from man to man. If a man enters the planet of Uttal, these women immediately capture him and induce him to drink an intoxicating beverage made with a drug known as hatak, cannabis indica. This intoxicant endows the man with great sexual prowess, of which the women take advantage for enjoyment. A woman will enchant him with attractive glances, intimate words, smiles of love, and then embraces. In this way, she induces him to enjoy sex with her to her full satisfaction. Because of his increased sexual power, the man thinks himself stronger than 10,000 elephants and considers himself most perfect. Indeed, illusioned and intoxicated by false pride, he thinks himself God, ignoring impending death. So this is illusion. The next planet below Uttal is Vittal, where Lord Shiva, who is known as the master of gold mines, lives with his personal associates, the ghosts and similar other living entities. Lord Shiva, as the progenitor, engages in sex with Bhavani, the progenitress, to produce living entities. And from the mixture of their vital fluids, the river named Hataki is generated. When fire, being made to blaze by the wind, drinks of this river and then sizzles and spits it out, it produces gold called Hataka. The demons who live on that planet with their wives decorate themselves with various ornaments made from that gold, and thus they live very happily. So sex and gold. No disease. No old age, no gray hair, no deodorant because of no smelly old perspiration. What need there is there for spiritual life? So those who understand the nature of the material world is so difficult, but don't have spiritual desires, can go to places like this for some time and enjoy. But what is wrong with this? What is, first of all, what's there, what's present? So much material enjoyment, so much material pleasure. If that's what we want, there's actually no reason to take to spiritual life. We can take to demoniac life, but a pious kind of demoniac life. An atheistical piety, so to speak. And enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. And there actually are so many people in this world, although the tendency nowadays is not to be pious enjoyers. Tendency is to be impious, which really means more mode of ignorance and more suffering. But there are so many people like that. It's very possible. Humanists. They want to be very, very ethical. There's no need for God, the concept of God, the concept of religion. Let people just be ethical on their own. So now, Bali Maharaj is going to speak. We're going to visit below the planet of Vittal, is another planet. So this is a subterranean planet, another one. And this one, there is a devotee living there. And he will hear about this devotee also in the 8th canto, and his name is Bali Maharaj. And he is a member of the demoniac race. But he is a great, great devotee. Now he is going to explain the flaw in subterranean heavenly enjoyments. In other words, atheistical, materialistic pleasure. Prabhupada already explained it in his purports, the great flaw is death. One can enjoy his mind enraptured with thoughts and desires for enjoyment, maybe even experience full satisfaction on some level through that enjoyment. But yet, there is a delusion, there is a flaw, and the flaw is that we're actually eternal and we're stuck, captured in materialistic, temporary circumstances in the material body that must one day die. Text 18. Below the planet Vital is another planet known as Sutal, where the great son of Maharaj Varochan, Bali Maharaj, who is celebrated as the most pious king, resides even now. For the welfare of Indra, the king of heaven, Lord Vishnu appeared in the form of a dwarf brahmachari as the son of Aditi, and tricked Bali Maharaj by begging for only 3 pieces of land, but taking all the 3 worlds. So there's a wonderful pastime where Bali Maharaj had performed so much pious activity, had taken over the position of Indra, the king of heaven. And Indra's mother, Aditi, had a son who she desired to win back the kingdom of heaven for her son, Indra, and take it away from Bali Maharaj. But Bali Maharaj was actually a devotee because he was the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, a great devotee. So Vamanadev came in the midst of a sacrifice that Bali Maharaj was performing, because Bali Maharaj had to perform pious activities to be able to maintain his position as the heavenly king, because he had usurped the position of Indra. So he was performing a sacrifice. And Vamanadev came, the Lord came as a dwarf Brahmin boy and begged from him. What did he want? Only 3 paces of land. Bali Maharaj said, 3 paces of land? I could give you villages, I could give you so much opulence, and you're only asking for 3 paces of land? How foolish. You should ask me for so much that you never have to ask anyone for anything again. And you're only asking for 3 paces of land? And Vamanadev replied, of course he was the Lord, he replied, if one is not satisfied with 3 paces of land, one will not be satisfied even if he possessed the entire universe. Because satisfaction comes from the mind. So Bali Maharaj said, all right, take your 3 steps of land. And Vamanadev said, according to the measurement of my steps. So with the first step, he covered all the worlds. Second step, he went up to the heavenly planets. And then he said, you've agreed to give me 3 steps, but I've taken everything you've possessed already. Now where should I put my 3rd step? I've done that with 2 steps and have 1 step remaining. So you've cheated me. You only have given me enough for 2 steps. And then Bali Maharaj fully surrendered and said, you can place your 3rd step upon my head and take me. So Vamanadev then insulted Bali Maharaj and tied him up and sent him down to Sutal. And rather than becoming angry at Bali Maharaj, at Vamanadev, Bali Maharaj fully gave everything and just accepted everything as the mercy of the Lord. And because of that, Vamanadev became the doorkeeper, the servant of Bali Maharaj. So this is described in the 8th canto, a wonderful pastime. For the welfare of Indra, the king of heaven, Lord Vishnu appeared in the form of a dwarf brahmachari as the son of Aditi, and tricked Bali Maharaj by begging for only 3 paces of land, but taking all the 3 worlds. Being very pleased with Bali Maharaj for giving all his possessions, the Lord returned his kingdom and made him richer than the opulent King Indra. Even now, Bali Maharaj engages in devotional service by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the planet of Suttal. Here's Prabhupada's purport. We'll read some of it. Almost all. Bali Maharaj offered everything to the Lord, his wealth, his kingdom, and even his own body. Sarvatma Navedana Bali. The Lord appeared before Bali Maharaj as a Brahmana beggar, and Bali Maharaj gave him everything he had. However, Bali Maharaj did not become poor by donating all his possessions to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He became a successful devotee and got everything back again with the blessings of the Lord. Similarly, those who give contributions to expand the activities of the Krishna Consciousness Movement and to accomplish its objectives will never be losers. They will get their wealth back with the blessings of Lord Krishna. On the other side, those who collect contributions on behalf of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness should be very careful not to use even a farthing of the collection for any purpose other than the transcendental loving service of the Lord. That's something has to be done very carefully by those who collect on behalf of the Lord. Even a farthing, how much is a farthing? You know? Do you know, or are you just guessing?
It's less than a halfpenny.
Yes. How many farthings in a?
I can't say for sure, but at least 12.
Why at least 12? You just know that?
No, because the old money was in 12.
Oh. 12. So it's a teeny, teeny, teeny insignificant amount.
Brass farthing is the expression.
Huh?
Brass farthing?
Yes.
Especially
yes. An insignificant amount, yet those who collect contributions on behalf of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness should be very careful not to use even a farthing of the collection for any purpose other than the transcendental loving service of the Lord. It's a very big responsibility. My dear King, Bali Maharaj donated all his possessions to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is text 19. Vamanadeva. But one should certainly not conclude that he achieved his great worldly opulence in Bilaswarga as a result of his charitable disposition. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the source of life for all living entities, lives within everyone as the friendly supersoul. And under his direction, a living entity enjoys or suffers in the material world. Greatly appreciating the transcendental qualities of the Lord, Bali Maharaj offered everything at his lotus feet. So there's a way of giving charity. Some people give charity with the hope of getting more money back than they gave, because this is the way religiosity works. You give to the Lord, or you give any charity, and at least you will get back that same amount. And depending upon who you give the charity to, you'll get back 2 times, 6 times, 12 times, hundreds of times on the amount that you gave. So people calculating what they're going to get back, give in charity. And that's more or less using charity as a business. So Sukadev Goswami is explaining that Bali Maharaj, his mood wasn't that. He didn't give everything to Vamandev in charity, expecting to get some heavenly reward, get so much more back by giving to an exalted Brahman who happened to be the Lord himself in charity. That wasn't his desire. And the wonderful Suttala planet that he got wasn't exactly a result, a reciprocation with the charity by the laws of karma. Rather, Bali Maharaj offered everything, greatly appreciating the transcendental qualities of the Lord, Balimaraj offered everything at his lotus feet. His purpose, however, was not to gain anything material, but to become a pure devotee. Atmanavedana. He wanted to give everything to Krishna, for Krishna's pleasure, in his service. His mood was fully devotional. For a pure devotee, he was a pure devotee, a Mahajana, great personality. For a pure devotee, the door of liberation is automatically opened. One should not think that Bali Maharaj was given so much material opulence merely because of his charity as a reciprocation with the material energy. When one becomes a pure devotee in love, he may also be blessed with good material position by the will of the Supreme Lord. However, one should not mistakenly think that the material opulence of a devotee is the result of his devotional service. The real result of devotional service is the awakening of pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which continues under all circumstances. So here is a very important point. Although someone who renders devotional service to the Lord, a devotee, may gain material opulence, but the material opulence that he has gained is not the result of devotional service. It is not what is to be gained from devotional service, something far more wonderful. Liberation is not what is to be gained by devotional service. Here, the real result, it explains, of devotional service is the awakening of pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which continues under all circumstances. So this is the definition of pure devotional service. Love that continues under all circumstances, and it's causeless. That means regardless of what's going on externally, the love is issuing from the devotee to the Lord. And it's causeless. That means that there is nothing that one is trying to achieve as a result of that devotional service other than the pleasure of the Lord. So the service isn't rendered to gain something, either material opulence or liberation, freedom from the material world. It is just an outpouring of love from the soul, because that is the natural position of the soul, and that is the actual result of devotional service. This causes love springing from the soul itself, and this is the natural consciousness of the soul. So that is the result. Now the next verse gives us another glimpse of the power of what devotional service can offer us. If one who is embarrassed by hunger, or who falls down, or stumbles, chants the holy name of the Lord even once, willingly or unwillingly, he is immediately freed from the reactions of his past deeds. So is that great and deep chanting with great love? If one is embarrassed by hunger and he says, "Oh, Hare Krishna, I'm so hungry." Or if he falls down, if someone is walking down the road and he trips over something and he's, "Oh, Krishna, Krishna." Or even not even says Krishna, Krishna, but just says Krishna once. And just something happens and even the holy names issue from his mouth, even unwillingly, not calculatingly. What is the result of that? He's immediately freed from the reactions of his past deeds. So this is very casual chanting. Not shudanam, not pure chanting, not chanting in great love. And the result of that chanting is so amazingly wonderful that one is freed from the reactions of his past deeds immediately by saying Krishna's name once without offense. Namavasya haitehai sarva papechai. Sins removed, reactions removed. And this still is not the result of devotional service. But just see how powerful devotional service in the form of chanting Krishna's name even once is. Karmis entangled in material activities face many difficulties in the practice of mystic yoga and other endeavors to achieve that same freedom. So there are other ways to attain freedom from sinful reactions, but with such difficulty. So this pure devotional way is so wonderful. So Bali Maharaj didn't perform devotional service, give everything to Krishna to gain something wonderful, material back, nor did he try to gain liberation, nor does the actual result of devotional service, nor is it its actual result on freedom from sins. This is just simply byproducts. Small byproducts from the actual glory of devotional service, what it can actually award upon us, and that is prema, love for Krishna that is causeless and non-ceasing. So there's a long purport here. I think we should wait and not try to rush through it. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Bali Maharaj was obviously aware of the fact that giving in charity would have a result because he was engaged in the sacrifice. That's fruit of activity. And giving in charity to a Brahmana during the sacrifice, that's prescribed.
Yes.
So he was aware of it, but he didn't consider it or didn't give much importance.
No, he was enamored by the Lord. He actually had he was already an advanced devotee, and Vamanadeva came on one level to take away Bali's land and give it to Indra, but on the higher level he came to elevate Bali Maharaj, to make his devotional service fructify into prema. He appeared before him.
There was this high place that he didn't consider the...
No, he wasn't considering anything. He was humiliated, he was tied up with ropes in front of everyone, he was imprisoned practically. His idea wasn't, I'm going to give this to gain something. That was the furthest thing from his mind. What he was doing was surrendering everything to the Lord. That's what was in his mind, with no thought of getting anything back. Jnana karma anavrita. Anukulena, very favorable. Krishna anushilanam bhaktivita.
That's just from his family connections, because he didn't have a glorified guru.
Prahlad Maharaj, his grandfather. He had association with the most exalted devotee. This is explained in the 8th canto. There's some interesting purports. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
All this material dirt in our heart when we perform the services, should we just tolerate this dirt and just allow it to be purified, or sometimes it hinders our devotional service?
Yeah, and the second canto of the Bhagavatam describes how akama sarvakama vamoksha kama dharati. That even if one is sarvakama, has so many material desires, full of material desires, one should still render devotional service to the Lord. And that is the process of satisfying the desires, but also purifying them. If one tries to satisfy one's desires without devotional service, one may satisfy the desires, but the result will be a further covering of the heart. In devotional service, if one tries to please Krishna, what will happen is Krishna, by his own arrangement, will satisfy our desires in such a way that the heart is cleansed and we lose those desires. So that's purification. Yet, when one still has material desires and actually wants material things as a result of his devotional service, then that's not pure devotional service. But if one has material desires but doesn't want them satisfied despite their presence in the heart, and he's thinking that even though they're there, it's like I'm not paying them any attention, and I'm just trying to please Krishna. If the heart is so sincere and determined and pure in that way, that's very glorious. That's a very, very high standard. If there's all the whisperings in the ear of material desires, do this and do that, and one basically ignores it, tolerates it, that's very pure. It's wonderful. And as a result of that, they'll gradually go away. The mind will give up. So there's different levels of devotional service. If one can't be on that level, one should engage himself if one can't just ignore the desires and just tolerate them and not pay them heed, basically they're sitting in the mind, then one can engage in devotional service in such a way that the material desires become satisfied, yet he becomes purified and they will go away in time. So it depends on the quality and the capacity of the person in which path they should take. And that needs guidance to that. Any other questions or comments? Maybe if Krishna allows, in the next year, we'll hear about Bali Maharaj. Maybe. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Bali Maharaj ki jai.